This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske. Last month, President Joe Biden announced his decision to pull all troops out of Afghanistan by this September 11th, exactly 20 years after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon took place. So how are veterans reacting to the news that this seemingly endless war is coming to its end without much to show for it? Joining Up to Date now is former Missouri Secretary of State and Afghanistan veteran Jason Kander. Jason, welcome back. Good to have you again.
Good to be with you. And let me start, Steve, by saying I hope your listeners appreciate that you've been doing a daily show for like 1,000 years, and that is a lot of work.
Almost 1,000 years, something like that. I appreciate that, Jason. Thank you.
And we appreciate listening. So thanks for having me, man.
You bet. Remind everybody what you did over there and when you were in Afghanistan, Jason.
Sure. So I was there from fall of 2006 to early 2007. And my job over there, I was a military intelligence officer. I've had a lot of different ways to describe it. Actually, I've recently stumbled upon the easiest way to describe it, which is there are a few different disciplines of intelligence. There's human intelligence, there's signals intelligence. It's kind of self-explanatory what those things are. My commander over there referred to what we did as thug intelligence, which is to say we cultivated relationships with thugs so that they would give us information on other thugs. And so basically I went out and conducted this thug int, so to speak. And that meant, often being practically by myself, just myself and a translator often, or with a very small team, sometimes in street clothes, meeting with people of questionable allegiances who were who had us outgunned often and outnumbered. And, you'd go into meetings and just think, I'm going to get some information and hopefully I get out of this meeting. So, and fortunately, I did. I had a good winning streak of that, which is why I'm able to talk to you right now.
You know, what was your first reaction to President Biden's decision to pull all the troops out of Afghanistan by September 11th?
My first reaction was not an intellectual one. It was an emotional one. And it just sort of took my breath away. I intellectually understood and understand that it is the right decision. I have I've known that for several years. I've been an advocate of ending this mission for, I think, three administrations maybe now. But that said, emotionally and mentally, it's taken some time to process. I mean, I'll be honest with you. Within a couple of days of that, I scheduled an appointment with my therapist at the VA, who I don't see regularly anymore, but, I kind of go in for tune-ups every few months. And then when I finally did talk to him, one of the things he said was that, when he saw that announcement, he thought, I bet I'm going to hear from Jason and a few others soon. And he's like, and sure enough, I had appointments popping up from over to my Afghanistan veteran patients. So it's hard to explain, but wars need to end. Wars can't go on forever. That's obvious, I guess. But I have a buddy I work with who said to me at one point, he said, the Vietnam veterans, like, we all know that they had it really bad, that they were treated really poorly. He said, but one difference is their wars actually ended. He said it's very hard to, quote unquote, move on from a war that hasn't ended. So it's just been a slow process of kind of processing it, I guess.
Why have you been so convinced for so many years that this war needed to come to an end?
Because you come to a point where it becomes clear that what is going to be accomplished has been accomplished. And on top of that, what I always come back to is this, is that if you were to go back and write American history from the beginning, like compose the American story from the very start, obviously there's a lot of things you would change. But one of the things that you would almost certainly not do is write Afghanistan as the longest war in American history. When you think of it from that perspective, it makes very little sense. And particularly given that, the mission initially and what was largely still the mission when I was there was deny Al-Qaeda a sanctuary from which to launch international terrorist attacks and depose the leaders of Al-Qaeda. And so while a lot of people have been characterizing this war in a lot of different ways in the last couple of weeks, I just keep coming back to the fact that we accomplished that mission. And we did that quite some time ago. And so there was clearly a certain degree of mission creep.
Do you feel a sense of relief? Is that part of this?
I feel relief for others. I feel relief in one sense. I feel relief in the sense that, and it hasn't happened yet. We still have people there now, but I'm both looking forward to and really unsure of what it will feel like to understand that there are not currently at that moment American service members in Afghanistan. I mean, one of the things about whatever you want to call it, I mean, it's an element of PTSD, but I mean, there's lots of people who don't have PTSD who have some element of survivor's guilt or just guilt about not still being there. I am hopeful that that will be alleviated for myself and for a lot of other people when there are not people there. And then on top of that, we are really close to a time when, if it hasn't happened already, when there are Americans serving in Afghanistan, probably has happened, who were born after 9/11. Certainly there have been Americans serving in Afghanistan who don't remember 9/11. And we've probably lost Americans in Afghanistan who don't remember 9/11. And so I'm relieved at the idea that we won't, hopefully won't lose any more Americans there. But also, and this has really not been talked about much in the news, but I'm not relieved when it comes to the reality of there's a lot of people I worked with there who, if they're still alive, I don't know, but if they are, I'm not sure what they and their family's fate is in the next 24 months. Mm-hmm. And these are people who made an impression on me and who I think did something really brave and I care about. And it's been talked about a little bit in terms of like translators and people like that who worked with us, but I'm not even talking, I worked with a lot of people who were in the Afghan military or were in the Afghan government. And, it's not like here. I mean, it's not like, you have a tough primary or a tough general election and then there's like maybe somebody loses a job. Like it's not going to be like that. If the Taliban come back in and have a lot more power, which is very possible.
I'm visiting with Jason Kander about President Joe Biden's decision to end the war in Afghanistan by September 11th, withdraw all American troops. What is the future? You're referring to it here. What do you think the future in Afghanistan, what it holds, and where are we going to be in 2 or 3 years?
Well, I'll tell you what I hope, and then I'll tell you what I'm worried about. Because, look, I'm not an expert. On what's going on there now. I mean, I was a soldier. I served there, but I'm not an expert on Afghanistan policy at the moment. But I'll tell you what I think, or what I hope, and what I worry about. My hope is that there will be something that we've been working toward for years. Even it started a little bit when I was there. Some sort of political role for, because look, the idea that the Taliban is not going to be a factor is, that's completely unrealistic. Mm-hmm. So the hope is that the Taliban will be more like, there's a group that I'm sure very few listeners have heard of called the HIG, which is the Hezbi Islami Gulbuddin, which is, was a political party and then, became a terrorist network, mostly in Eastern Afghanistan, allied with the Taliban. And sometimes goes back and forth between, taking a political approach and taking a violent approach. My hope is that the Taliban can start to go in that direction. Now, the hard part is the Taliban is not exactly a group that is, inclined toward participating in a more democratic process. But that's the hope, and that's been the goal for a long time. There's a question of whether, going to the what I worry about, there's a question of whether the government of Afghanistan has the leverage and the authority to actually make that happen. I mean, I think it was, and I'm not trying to be partisan, but I think it was a mistake when the Trump administration did a deal with the Taliban that didn't include the government of Afghanistan. I understood it. I understood the urgency, certainly, to try and effectuate a way for America to get out of this. But I think that was a mistake to handle it that way. And I think it left the government of Afghanistan with very little leverage.
Right.
And I guess just the thing to remember here is that we've been referring to this as the war is ending. Well, the war is ending for America and for the NATO coalition, but the war is not ending in Afghanistan. And that's an important thing to keep in mind.
And also, I think that the Taliban is not a monolith, right? This is a big, complicated organization.
Yes and no. It is one of the misconceptions I think oftentimes about the Taliban is that it is a purely ideological, religious fanaticism sort of movement. It's thought of, I think, a lot like ISIS, and I think there are plenty of Taliban or former Al Qaeda or people who would have been Al Qaeda prior to the decimation of Al Qaeda who have gone in the direction of ISIS, even in Afghanistan. But really, the Taliban is a monolith in one sense, which is, or at least it's homogenous in one sense, which is it is largely Pashtun. I mean, it's almost entirely Pashtun, which is why it comes so almost exclusively from the South and the East. I mean, there's a portion of the world that Americans really don't know about that's along the Durrani line, which is like the border with Pakistan, which is a line that, a lot of people in that region don't recognize and, in fact, do not refer to either Pakistan or Afghanistan. They don't refer to that region that way. They refer to it as Pashtunistan. And so my point is, because Iraq was the focal point of the news and the debate for, several years from about 2003 to 2011, that is the lens through which a lot of Americans see Afghanistan as well, and it's not an accurate lens. It's not a question of Sunni and Shia, for instance, in Afghanistan, because Afghanistan is like 97 or something percent Sunni. It is a civil war. It's largely a tribal civil war, and the Taliban. Now, not all Pashtuns are by any stretch. Not all Pashtuns are Taliban. I mean, I had translators who were Pashtuns, but almost all Taliban are Pashtun. So it's not a monolith, but it is rather homogenous.
The New York Times asked a series of questions about this war as we all contemplate what this moment means for us. One of the questions asked was, how could the countless sacrifices and small victories leave Afghanistan with no better promise of peace today than it had a generation ago?
Yeah, look, I don't know that it's no better promise. I mean, it's hard to even think of it as a generation, but I guess it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I suppose the way to think about it, and again, like, I'm not able to evaluate this necessarily just exclusively as I would maybe, some conflict in some place I'd never been to. So I don't have that objectivity. What I do know is that at least during the period that we were there, there are girls, women who have been educated. There are people who have had, at least in certain regions of the country, a much greater degree of freedom and in some cases prosperity than they would have had otherwise. There are certainly huge mistakes also, and there are people who suffered as a result. What I keep going back to is there's been this, not just mission creep in Afghanistan, but there's also been a sliding of our perception of the war in the sense that we have often forgotten as Americans what the point of it was in the first place. It's being treated right now by a lot of commentators as either Vietnam, and people are saying this was another Vietnam, or it's being treated as just lumped in with Iraq, just like as if they were the same war. And I remember, 2 weeks ago, I sat with my therapist at the VA, or it was a telehealth visit, so it was over Zoom. But, I sat and I talked to him, and I told him, I don't understand why this has upset me so much. I told him I haven't had like a recurrence of my typical symptoms. I've just kind of been irritable, And mm-hmm. we talked through it, and what we figured that I was bothered by the fact that it was being talked about like Vietnam, being talked about like Iraq. Because when I was in Afghanistan in 06, 07, I had friends in Iraq who they were in the same sort of danger. They were, you know, going through a lot of the same stuff. But what they were telling me was, I'm frustrated because I don't know why we're here. And I remember feeling like, well, at least I know why I'm here. And I don't like that both wars are being treated with right. that sense, because while right. it went on far too long and there was a point at which we shouldn't have been there anymore, we were attacked by people who staged those attacks from inside Afghanistan. We did deny them that sanctuary. We, you know, eventually we got bin Laden. We, you know, you don't hear about threats from Al-Qaeda all the time. So while I think that it was incorrect to go in and to at any point allude to the idea that we were going to do what no one else had ever done and turn Afghanistan into a Western democracy or even hold Afghanistan for a long period of time, that was a mistake. The mission that we were initially given was accomplished. And mm-hmm. and I guess what I found out talking to my therapist, what I felt a lot better about when I realized it was, I was just mad about that. And I think a lot of other Afghanistan veterans may feel the same way.
Former Missouri Secretary of State and Afghanistan veteran Jason Kander is my guest. Our phone number here, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. This is interesting. This might be down your pike here, Jason. What about the future of counterterrorism efforts in that part of the world? What will this withdrawal, where will that leave us?
I don't know, but I think I don't feel that not having a major troop presence in Afghanistan is going to appreciably hurt our ability to conduct counterterrorism in the region. I mean, because at this point we have by necessity, because, you know, initially Donald Rumsfeld had this vision of the war in Afghanistan as a thing where there were going to be like guys in black pajamas dropping in and just taking care of everything, which is why the war was so under-resourced in the mm-hmm. beginning and mm-hmm. why there was such an enormous reliance upon special operators and that sort of thing, that it has, unfortunately for a lot of special operators and that community, it has created an enormous reliance upon that special operations community and also upon, you know, the intelligence community that supports it. I don't think in the long run that that is a good thing for the American military, but in terms of our ability to be agile and to conduct counterterrorism efforts in the region, I don't think whether or not that launches from Blackhawks at Bagram Air Base or instead, you know, comes out of Doha or Bahrain or Kuwait, I'm not convinced that that makes an enormous difference. And for anybody who's interested in more about that topic, by the way, I recently on my podcast interviewed Dan Taberski, who just did a documentary podcast series called The Line, which looks into how the special operations community has been used and what the effect on them has been, and I think it's really worth a listen. So I guess the answer to your question is I think that it won't appreciably decrease our ability to conduct counterterrorism in the near future. But I do think that in the long term, we need a more sustainable strategy than one that just treats our special operators and our intelligence community like a SWAT team. Hmm.
Do you think the Afghans are going to wind up seeing this as a giant betrayal, our withdrawal?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think that the average Afghan will. I say that based on so far what the leadership in Afghanistan's response to this has been, because they are trying to seize the moment and try and say, okay, we think we can handle it. Whether they believe that they can handle what's coming or not, you know, they have chosen so far not to scapegoat the coalition. Now that could change when things go poorly. But one of the things about Afghanistan is that, and it goes back to people having a tendency to view it through Iraq, which was much more in the news at the time, is that it was never, in my experience, it was not largely a question of winning hearts and minds. in Afghanistan. Most of the public wanted us and wanted the government of Afghanistan to prevail. It was a question of convincing, of instilling confidence in the mm-hmm. public that we could. Because mm-hmm. going back to that analogy I used a few minutes ago about like a tough election, you know, in this country, like if you sided with, you know, with the loser, you're probably going to be out of a job. Over there, if you side with the loser in this conflict, you and your family are in trouble. Mm-hmm. And so it was, for us, it was a question of convincing the public that it was safe and it was wise and it was worth their effort to support the government of Afghanistan that we were trying to support. So I don't think that in the long run it'll be seen as a betrayal. I don't think so, but you know, we'll see.
The podcast that Jason referred to a few minutes ago, his podcast is called Majority 54, and it's definitely worth a listen. What are you hearing from other veterans? You were speaking about your own sort of frustration with the way this has been characterized as another Vietnam. Are your colleagues, your buddies, are some of them saying the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't talked with a lot of other Afghanistan veterans about it. Specifically, I mean, it's been more of sort of just reflection on the idea that we, you know, it's kind of hard to believe that it's going to be 20 years. It's more of that sort of thing because it doesn't feel like it. I mean, like any major event in your life, whether you're, you know, whether it was going to war or whatever, it can both feel like it was really long ago and feel like it was yesterday. And so I think it's more just the realization of how long this has gone on. That's been a lot of what I've talked to fellow veterans about mm-hmm. in the last few weeks. So and then, you know, my reference point is just anecdotally hearing from, without, you know, him saying anything about anybody specific, just
right.
I think reassuring me by saying, you know, what you're expressing is very consistent with what I'm hearing from other patients who are Afghanistan veterans.
Let's go to some phone calls here. Bob from Liberty. Bob, you're on Up to Date.
Oh, well, good morning. And good morning to Mr. Kander, too. I appreciate your service. I too, am a retired Marine officer and served in both tours in Iraq. I was listening to Jason's frustration with how the news media handles things to how the American people see things. And I get very upset too with the chicken hawks that we have. Only 1% of the American population has ever served right now in the military. And so they right. don't get it. And they don't understand what it does to our families and everything else. And it's so easy to have us over in faraway places in dealing with in bad situations, and it has no effect at all on what's going on here in the United States. And my second point is, I don't know where we get this idea that we get to police the world. I mean, I don't know how we would feel if a foreign part was in our country telling us, hey, we're not going to leave until you, let's give an example. Say you have equality for African Americans in this country. You know, we're going to dictate how you're going to right. run yourself, and the arrogance of that really gets us into trouble. And I'll listen off
yeah,
the air.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Bob. Jason, what about this notion of America being the world's policeman?
Well, first of all, welcome home, and thanks for your service. Yeah. You know, I actually would link the two things that he mentioned here, because when it comes to, you know, intervention, you know, which is oftentimes in American history, particularly over the last 100 years, been a big part of our foreign policy. It's been foreign intervention. There are times when it is absolutely right. There are times when it has been incorrect. There are times when it started out right and then it just dragged on too long, which I think is absolutely what the category you can put Afghanistan in. But I would link this to his other point, which is that if you are going to be a country that says, hey, there are going to be times when we intervene when it is in our interest, but also in the interest of a larger coalition, or, you know, because we think it's the right thing to do, or, you know, for all sorts of different reasons. And you could make an argument that we've never done it simply because we think it's the right thing to do. But there's always been national interest involved at a minimum. And sometimes, you know, people would argue that they haven't been the right national interest. But either way, if you are going to consider whether or not we should be interventionist, you cannot escape his other point, which is the huge civil military divide in this country. Right. I mean, when a nation is in a posture where the military goes to war, but the country doesn't, that is a perfect formula for wielding that military as some sort of tool without ever having to sacrifice anything, and a formula for these interventions going on for far too long. Huh. And by the way, not only going on far too long, but often being entered into too lightly. I mean, when you think about the way in which we went into Afghanistan and then distracted ourselves and diverted a ton of resources to Iraq, well, that sort of thing doesn't happen when it's not just the military going to war, when it's the whole country going to war. And that doesn't necessarily even mean that everybody has to have a kid in the military, everybody has to have a neighbor's kid in the military. But it does mean that if you're going to go to war, you don't do things like write that cost down on some other piece of paper so that everybody back home gets to live as if there's no war going on. No, you do things like, sorry, rich people are going to have to pay more money to and in taxes to pay for this, that there have to be some level of societal sacrifice. Otherwise you just stay at war forever. And so in that way, I think these two points are linked.
You know, you say you don't like people comparing this war to, you know, Vietnam or to Iraq, but you've seen that theme. You're seeing it pretty consistently in the media right now, Jason.
Yeah, what I see that bothers me is I feel like, and I don't want to be reactionary toward it. It's just that what I'm seeing is an oversimplification, right? I mean, we do this with news from the world in general. I mean, look at what's going on with India right now. I mean, there should be no better situation for us to completely be able to relate and empathize and humanize an enormous human crisis on the other side of the world. We just went through the worst of COVID here, and now they're going through something even worse in India. And yet it's, you know, barely on, you know, barely major news in this country. And so with that comes the fact that there's this simplification of it, this idea where I'm concerned that, you know, in however many years, when my son is studying history in school and they get to 9/11, that they then just talk about Iraq and Afghanistan as if they are the same country and the same war.
Right.
And they're not. We went there for completely different reasons. I mean, our intervention in Afghanistan, after being attacked by Al-Qaeda, who got refuge from the Taliban, that was the right thing to do. It was the right, it made sense. It was a just cause. Iraq was built on a lie. And then, you know, Vietnam was about, you know, it was about the Cold War. I mean, it was a hot war within the Cold War, and it was a fool's errand from the beginning. You know, the people who served in it served their country honorably. I know a lot of those people. I've built relationships with them, especially over the last few years. But that mission was problematic from the start. And Afghanistan was a place where the mission made sense at the beginning. Mission creep took over. And I just think it should be remembered correctly.
Hey, Jason, before I let you go, give us a quick update on the Veterans Community Project, which, of course, is one of your main focal points in your life right now, taking care of veterans here in the Kansas City area, tiny homes out at 89th and Troost. I know you're expanding across the country right now.
Well, thanks for the question. And thanks, you were out there to visit us about a week ago.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed, I always like showing my friends the place.
Yeah, absolutely.
I enjoy it very
much.
It's
worth seeing.
It's going really well. It's the best civilian job I've ever had. We have broken ground on a new campus in Boulder County, Colorado, so to serve the Denver area. We will break ground later this summer in St. Louis on a campus there. We've just signed a memorandum of understanding with the city of Sioux Falls, South Dakota. And in fact, just a couple of days ago, their city council voted unanimously to go ahead and move forward with the project. And so we're about to take property from them and build a campus there. And then I am headed out of town in 3 days. I can't talk about where yet because we're not
an undisclosed location
yet.
Right.
Yes, at an undisclosed location where we're getting very close to acquiring property. And then there's about three more communities that fit that category. So unfortunately, this is an enormous need. The need to serve veterans in a way that you know serves every veteran, and also to address veterans' homelessness. But fortunately, Kansas City has birthed this organization that you know Veterans Community Project that I like to describe as if a forward operating base in Afghanistan and a startup in Silicon Valley had a baby. I mean, it's just
right.
It's innovative and amazing, and it's just got this incredible vibe. And I think we have a real shot to make an enormous difference for veterans
That's
across
amazing.
The country. And I love the work.
That's Jason Kander, the former Missouri Secretary of State, a veteran of a conflict in Afghanistan, the war there. His podcast is Majority 54. His current focus, the Veterans Community Project out at 8900 Troost. Jason, always appreciate the time. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Steve.